Last week, Hutton Orbital Radio, the continuous musical broadcast beamed from radio.forthemug.com, fell mysteriously silent. Commanders across inhabited space, many of whom discovered years ago that their ship's audio systems had been permanently fused to Hutton radio mode, were left in a quiet void. Playback attempts produced only a faint hooting noise, described by several pilots as unhelpful, haunting, and in one case, probably a sign from gusto. Investigations were launched. Relay beacons throughout the bubble were checked, from Wolf 359 to George's Pants. Even the repeater near Colonia was manually inspected, which involved flying to Colonia, which took a while. All of them were working perfectly. The fault was, in the end, rather more local. The main broadcast antenna, situated on top of the station's communications mast, was found in a condition best described as crumpled. Not askew, not slightly off axis, crumpled. Bent sharply back on itself in a fashion most commonly associated with a careless Python pilot and the phrase, "I'm sure there's space to turn around." Evidence at the scene suggests that the ship in question collided with the structure at low speed in reverse, paused briefly, and then attempted to correct by applying maximum forward thrust, effectively finishing the job before disappearing into supercruise. The antenna did not recover. Hutton's maintenance contract, Blatch, Blatch and Blatch, were the first on the scene. Based out of LHS 340 and specialists in orbital impact fatigue, they arrived promptly, remained inside, and inspected the damage through a porthole. When asked for comment, lead technician Blatch, the second one, stated, "It's minus lots outside, the solar wind shear could slice a sidewinder in half, and last time I went out there, my tea froze inside my mug. We'll monitor the situation from here." With no viable plan and a growing volume of increasingly erratic pilot complaints, one message simply read, "Sound, please." A decision was made to call in an external expertise. Commander Overlight, having trawled the Hutton archives for suitable personnel, located a contact number for the long-retired but still broadly upright Commander Psycho Cow. Psycho Cow, last seen in public demanding royalties for jingles no one remembered authorising, was extracted from his rest facility in 36 off Uchi, issued with a vacuum-rated repair suit, and dispatched to the antenna on a one-way tether. Details of the repair process are classified, but station logs indicate a toolkit, a heavy spanner, and a suspiciously old Hutton mug were all involved. The procedure concluded with a bang, two hoots, and the return of uninterrupted streaming. The music resumed, the hooter stopped. Several pilots filed formal apologies for the things they'd said during the outage. Commander Psycho Cow has returned to semi-retirement and is reportedly offering antenna repair services on a freelance basis. His rates are negotiable. His methods are not.
One of the yellow wind-up entertainment vehicles stationed at Boston Base in Epsilon Indy escaped its test enclosure this week and entered the main cargo storage facility under full spring tension. The unit, designated Vehicle 7, has been undergoing a routine winding trial when it disengaged from its holding clamps and left the designated circuit at speed. It proceeded along Corridor B, turned left past the tool lockers, and entered Cargo Zone 3. A standard issue wheelie bin was overturned in the initial incident. No injuries were reported, though several junior logistics personnel were observed taking cover. The vehicle continued towards the Civilian Education Annex, where Miss Miggins' Year 4 Geography class was in session. Commander Littlegrey was dispatched to intercept. Using a standard anti-vehicle stinger strip from traffic control stores, the commander successfully disabled the vehicle's rear wheels. A second yellow BP car was then deployed to perform a controlled pit manoeuvre, diverting the runway unit into an insulated wall panel. It came to a halt without further incident. Commander Littlegrey recovered the winding key and returned both vehicles to the workshop. The class was relocated to a spare room in the hydroponics bay and resumed their curriculum on planets that aren't round. The wheelie bin has been righted. A review is ongoing. All further entertainment car winding has been suspended pending changes to the anchoring system.
Flossie.
Sorry. This week, I had the distinct pleasure of taking Lakon's new Type 11 out for a test flight. Naturally, I brought it to Hutton Orbital. Not to mine anything, as there's nothing to mine, but because it looks impressive in photographs, and someone needed to confirm whether it could be parked without nudging the gin tanks. Pictures are coming in future weeks, assuming the Type 11 has not blocked the view. Now, the ship. This is not a retrofit or a slightly tweaked transport. This is Lakon's first purpose-built mining vessel, and it shows. The design is straightforward. Cockpit slightly off-centre, hull chunky in all the usual places, and a visible mining attachment mounted just to the right of the canopy. It is firmly fixed, industrial in appearance, and clearly not there for decoration. The integrated multi-limpet controller is locked in one of the internal compartments. It handles both collecting and prospecting, and can do so simultaneously. Unless you have already launched every collector limpet it can manage. In that case, it refuses to send out a prospector until something returns, expires, or makes room. To avoid waiting, I located the second dedicated prospector controller. It made the process cleaner and less dependent on limpet timing. In flight, it behaves exactly like a Lakon medium ship. Stable, slow to turn, vertical thrusters that do the job, lateral thrusters that try. Boosting happens eventually and it is best not relied upon. The flight model is predictable and heavy in a way that suits mining more than manoeuvring. The engine pylons retract automatically when the landing gear or cargo scoop is deployed. This is confirmed. They have not interfered with anything yet. The cockpit offers an excellent view of your mining equipment and a workable one of your surroundings. Visibility is fine. The ship remains level. The offset seating is more cosmetic than functional and takes only a moment to adjust to. Would I recommend it? If you're serious about mining, yes. It is designed for the task. It makes no attempt to be versatile. It mines. It supports limpets. It provides the tools for the job. And it does so without fuss. I am Norma Snuckers and I flew the Type 11 to Hutton. It arrived intact, mined nothing, and looked extremely prepared to mine everything else. Pictures soon for the mug.
At precisely 03:14:12 station time, an anomalous and extremely low frequency energy fluctuation was registered by the long range deep field array at Waystation 9, positioned on the Andromeda facing edge of the galactic disk. The signal was brief, diffuse, spatially incoherent, described in the official data logs as non-localized phase displacement across a discontinuous vector field, described by the technician who first saw it as, that's odd, cross-referencing the direction of origin, temporal dispersion, and general scientific intuition, the signal has been linked to the Andromeda Galaxy, approximately 2.537 million light-years from the Milky Way. After consultation with a mirror, a chalkboard, and two very patient interns, I have classified the phenomenon as a cosmic dark matter burp. To be clear, dark matter itself is not directly observable. It does not radiate, emit, reflect, or in any measurable way participate in electromagnetic interaction. It does, however, cheat. It reveals itself only through gravitational effects, leaving behind distortions, delays, and unexplained absences. In this case, what we believe the sensors observed is not the dark matter itself, but the after effect of its movement, possibly a sudden redistribution of localized mass in Andromeda, possibly the collapse of a halo substructure, possibly the cosmic event of such scale and subtlety that it managed to wobble our instruments 2.5 million years later, that the signal reached the edge of the Milky Way at light speed, and is projected to arrive in the vicinity of Hutton Orbital in approximately 25,000 years. This is not cause for alarm. The burp will be faint and broadly uninterested in affecting local traffic. Mug integrity is not at risk, we think. But we don't know how mugs actually warm up when near frameshift energies yet, so I'll reserve judgment on that one. Further analysis is underway. I have requested enhanced gravitational sampling across Hutton's outer marker buoys, a 5-year study into non-visible mass displacement, and a bacon sandwich. Only the sandwich has been approved so far.
Structural reorganisation at Hutton Orbital continues this week as Commanders Lithobreaker, Vintigan, and Terran 4295 begin what is officially being described as an update to Studio 5. In practice, this has involved moving it. Construction has commenced on a new purpose-built studio, complete with updated equipment, a functioning ventilation system, a sofa for the green room that meets minimal structural requirements. However, the relocation has introduced a number of consequences. Unlike the existing Studio 5, which was directly located within the server cluster atop one of the Hutton structural arms, the new studio has been installed in the opposite arm, directly adjacent to the social media department. The proximity has required a full review of station access protocols, particularly for the public discourse or Discord Boulevard. I might try that one again. The public Discord Boulevard and its dedicated Shouters Corner, where opinions may be expressed without the benefit of context or volume control. New ID cards are being issued to all Hutton personnel. The radio team will be issued biometric identification badges, complete with voice print, verification and access limitations based on biscuit consumption. Hey, I'm sorted.
If you eat too many, you're locked out.
I'm stuffed.
They're my biscuits.
The entire upgrade is being conducted in alignment with the station-wide changes introduced following the Vanguard Squadron Management updates as issued by the Pilots Federation. Hutton's internal systems are being brought in line with the revised command and permissions infrastructure, including authentication layers, channel controls, and laminated signage. Ooh. Commander Lithobreaker is overseeing technical integration. Commander Vintigan is reviewing the proximity restrictions. Commander Terran 4295 is configuring the audio routing matrix and is unavailable for further questions. Mainly as I confiscated everything, as that's my job. Completion of the new studio will proceed once network isolation protocols are confirmed. The orange snakes have been evicted from the ductwork. Mr. Dusty is located and Mr. Dusty is located and relieved of all of his tools. He pinched the sofa and has cleared the emissions check. Estimation of the completion time for this project is unclear at this stage, but suggestions are been taken for the name of the next studio, which probably is going to be Studio 6. Honestly, Studio McStudio face is not funny anymore.
Last week's experiments in CQC were broadly successful, despite surprising challenges in simply getting everyone to the right place for a proper scrap. The eventual compromise solution of to hell with it, just shoot whoever's nearby, worked remarkably well, and allowed for a number of community members and a couple of passing strangers to join into the carnage. There were solid performances from the CQC veterans, including Commander Volcarius, Aiden, Vantayun, and somebody who refers to themselves as the Naughty Body Wash. For the novices, Commanders Little Grey and Litherbreakers rapidly mastered the art of the mostly not exploding, while Commander Hugh Pratt, with the training thrusters barely off his ship, gave a bold display of what he said were the standard Hutton-approved combat tactics. But to the rest of us, looked like gunning it full speed at the target, firing everything, and hoping to come out of the ensuing collision with more hull than the other fellow. When questioned about this approach, he stated,
"What do all these buttons do?"
Sometime later, he clarified this comment, explaining,
"Don't worry, chaps, I've got the hang of it now."
Before unexpectedly activating his frameshift drive and disappearing. His signal was later found in the Arapaho system on the far side of the galaxy, which, while inconvenient, did give Commanders Lithobreaker and Volcarius an excuse to take one of the new fleet carriers out for a spin to go and fetch him. So they very kindly launched a rescue mission. Upon his return to Hutton Space, Commander Pratt was greeted with a small welcome reception and an increased share of responsibility for the ever-growing Hutton heap. That'll teach you not to do it again.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we fart and lift and get out, leaving the BGS with the smell of our cosmic bottom burps. Booms this week are all in the usual places, and also in Hellpassi, or Hellpassi, where it has been tastefully paired with a bit of civil unrest. There are outbreaks in Leuton 143-23, Call 285 Sector VR-Y, B15-2, and Call 285 Sector ZF-Q-D6-105. There is an outbreak of investments too. Look no further than 36 Ophiuchi, Wolf 630, Rego EP-V B29-5, Barnard Star, Epsilon Eridani, and Wolf 359. The snappily titled Call 285 Sector JK-C B27-5 has gone bust, and it's a bit of civil unrest on the side. Call 285 Sector DM-M D7-87 has us in election with the HIP 95973 Progressive Party. There are wars in La Salle 760, LFT 1324, and Pyretti. So, if you want, what does it all mean? I forgot to put that in, but what does it all mean? If you want to truck it, truck medical supplies into those outbreak systems, or more general stuff to the investment ones. If you want to shoot it, then get yourself over to a war system and weed in on Hutton's side. If you want to mission run, then run missions for Hutton in those election systems. And if you want to help sort out that bust, then you can sell cartographic data at Hutton-owned stations in... what did I call it? Oh my god, I've lost the name of it now. The one that went bust. You know the one. Anyway, that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.